Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo.
And I'm Brian Lynn. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today on the show, Andrew Smith brings us Ask a Teacher. Ana Mateo has words and their stories. And we close with an American story. But first, a baby hippopotamus in Thailand became famous earlier this year when zoo workers published images and videos of her online. Now the pygmy hippo, named Mu Deng, has an official song and video released in several languages for her fans worldwide. Mu Deng lives at Khao Kyo Open Zoo, southeast of the Thai capital, Bangkok. Zoo worker Attapon Nundi has been posting sweet moments of the animal's life for the past few months. During that time, the hippo has received widespread attention on social media. Fans of the animal have expressed how they enjoy watching the pink-cheeked baby actively interact with her mother and other zoo workers. Mu Deng, which means bouncy pork in Thai, is a kind of meatball. The name, chosen by fans on social media, is similar to those of her two siblings, Mu Tun, stewed pork, and Mu Wan, sweet pork. In addition, the zoo has a common hippo named Ka Mu, stewed pork leg. Mu Deng's popularity has spread internationally, and she has gained the attention of some professional sports teams. Fans say her name fits her lively personality. Mu Deng likes to deng, or bounce, and her bouncing behavior has led to countless internet memes. For example, the German soccer team FC Bayern, American basketball team Phoenix Suns, and the American football team Washington Commanders have all created Mu Deng memes. The images give her interesting things to wear and put her in different human-like situations. Attapon, the zoo worker, told the Associated Press he was surprised the newborn pygmy hippo quickly became such a huge internet star. "I wanted people to know her," he explained. "I wanted a lot of people to visit her or watch her online or leave fun comments. I never would have thought of this," he added. The widespread publicity led a well-known Thai composer to write and produce a special song for Mu Deng. The lively 50-second song is called Naturally Mu Deng. One of Thailand's biggest recording companies, GMM Music, released the song. A music video that goes along with the song shows the baby hippo bouncing around, playing with her keeper, or spending time with her mother, Jonah. Mu Deng is now 4 months old. She has also been drawing big crowds at the zoo. Officials estimated the baby hippo has brought in about 3,000 to 5,000 visitors a day on average during the past few months. The zoo has been selling clothes, bedding, and other products based on Mudeng. The zoo's director is Norongwit Chodchai. He told the AP that the additional earnings from Mudeng will help the zoo's breeding programs for many endangered animals like the pygmy hippopotamus. Illegal hunting and loss of habitat threatens the animals' existence. Pygmy hippos are native to West Africa, but experts say there are only 2,000 to 3,000 of them left in the wild. All four versions of the Mudeng song are available on YouTube and on streaming services including Spotify and Apple Music.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Kelvin in Ghana about the usage of prepositions in English. Dear teacher, please, I would like to know more about prepositions. Thank you, Kelvin. I'm happy to answer this question, Kelvin. Prepositions are those small words that give additional information about nouns, such as direction, time, location, and possession. We can put prepositions into two large groups. In the first group, prepositions tell us about direction, location, time, and relations between people or things. These details are what people first learn when they study prepositions in English. Just a few examples of location and time include
on the table, under the table, by 9 in the morning, at night.
Some examples that show relations between people include
a friend of mine, I worked with him, I did it for you.
The second large group includes expressions where the preposition sometimes has a less exact meaning. That is why knowing which preposition to use with these expressions becomes more difficult. Consider the following two examples. The first is used in British English, the second in American English.
This house is different to the one I used to live in. This house is different from the one I used to live in.
The two examples mean the same thing, and there is no clear reason why we should use one preposition instead of the other. Here is another expression where we use one preposition instead of another. We often say,
the news took me by surprise.
But we never say,
the news took me with surprise.
However, notice that changing the preposition by to the preposition with does not appear to change the meaning of this expression. To someone learning English, one preposition might seem as good a choice as any other for this expression. That is why it is easy to make mistakes and sometimes difficult to remember the correct preposition to use. So, how can you remember what preposition to use with such expressions? Do not try to learn the expression separately from the preposition and then go back and put the preposition in your memory. Instead, try to hear and remember the entire expression as one phrase instead of several words. Just as we put numbers into groups of 3 or 4, to remember phone numbers, try to think of an expression and its preposition together as one group. For our readers and listeners, what are your questions about American English? We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And please include where you are from in your email, too. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Andrew Smith.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Today, we are talking about the term rub. While this three-letter word is small, it should not be seen as unimportant. In fact, rub carries a lot of meaning and can be used in many different situations. For starters, rub is a noun. One way it is used this way is in cooking. A rub is a collection of dry seasonings that can be added to meat, tofu, or vegetables before cooking. Rub can also mean something problematic. If I ask, "What's the rub?" I am asking, "What's the problem?" This expression is very informal. Rub is also a verb. For example, I might rub my head if I have a headache. Or I may rub my shoulder if it hurts. And if something really hurts, I might rub in some medicine to help reduce the pain. But to rub something in also has another meaning, an idiomatic one. If you rub something in, you keep reminding someone of something unpleasant. This is a very common expression, so let's hear it used in a conversation.
Hey, I had fun playing basketball yesterday. Your team almost won. Almost.
It was fun. I got a great workout.
What was the score again?
Okay. Stop rubbing it in. Your team beat mine by a lot.
Rubbing something in is similar to rubbing someone's nose in something. In the example we just heard, one man rubs his friend's nose in a loss at a basketball game. When we rub someone's nose in something, we remind them that they have failed or got something wrong. As a verb, rub is used in many other expressions. If you rub someone the wrong way, you cause that person to be angry or annoyed. It means you have irritated them, usually for something in your personality or behavior. You do not have to do anything specific to rub someone the wrong way. For example, the president of the company rubbed some of his employees the wrong way with his direct way of speaking. Another expression is to rub elbows with someone. We use this expression to describe being at the same event as someone or simply being around them. But we don't generally use it for interactions with our close friends. Often the people we rub elbows with are famous, important, or influential. For example, I rubbed elbows with some famous people at the mayor's birthday celebration. Another way to use the verb rub is in the expression to rub salt in the wound. This means you make a bad situation worse for someone else. Let's say you know someone who loses their job. When they tell you that news, you remind them that they still owe you money. You have just rubbed salt in the wound. Ouch. This is similar to kicking someone when they are down. Another use of the word rub is in the phrasal verb rub together. We use this with other words to say that we lack something. For example, if I don't have two brain cells to rub together, I can't think straight. I'm confused. Or if you don't have two dimes to rub together, you have no money. You are broke. You could also say pennies or quarters, as long as they are coins. Our last expression is to rub something out. That means you get rid of it. And sometimes we use it in a rather violent situation. If a bad person rubs someone out, they do away with them. In other words, they actually kill them. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
And now, the Learning English Program, American Stories. This week, we bring you Two Thanksgiving Day Gentlemen by O. Henry.
There is one day that is ours. There is one day when all Americans go back to the old home and eat a big dinner. Bless the day. The president gives it to us every year. Sometimes he talks about the people who had the first Thanksgiving. They were the Puritans. They were some people who landed on our Atlantic shore. We really don't remember much about them. But those people ate a large bird called turkey on the first Thanksgiving day. So we have turkey for Thanksgiving dinner, if we have enough money to buy a turkey. That is a tradition. Yes, Thanksgiving Day is the one day of the year that is purely American. And now here's the story to prove to you that we have old traditions in this new country. They are growing older more quickly than traditions in old countries. That is because we are so young and full of life. We do everything quickly. Stuffy Pete sat down on a seat in the New York City park named Union Square. It was the third seat to the right as you enter Union Square from the east. Every Thanksgiving Day, for 9 years, he had sat down there at 1 p.m. Every time, things had happened to him. They were wonderful things. They made his heart feel full of joy. And they filled another part of him, too. They filled the part below his heart. On those other Thanksgiving days, he had been hungry. It is a strange thing. There are rich people who wish to help the poor, but many of them seem to think that the poor are hungry only on Thanksgiving Day. But today, Pete was not hungry. He had come from a dinner so big that he had almost no power to move. His light green eyes looked out from a gray face on which there was still a little food. His breath was short. His body had suddenly become too big for his clothes. It seemed ready to break out of them. They were torn. You could see his skin through a hole in the front of his shirt. But the cold wind with snow in it felt pleasantly cool to him. for Stuffy Pete was overheated with the warmth of all he had had to eat. The dinner had been much too big. It seemed to him that his dinner had included all the turkey and all the other food in the whole world. So he sat, very, very full. He looked out at the world without interest, as if it could never offer him anything more. The dinner had not been expected. He had been passing a large house near the beginning of that great broad street called Fifth Avenue. It was the home of two ladies of an old family. These two old ladies had a deep love of traditions. There were certain things they always did. On Thanksgiving Day at noon, they always sent a servant to stand at the door. There he waited for the first hungry person to walk by. The servant had orders to bring that person into the house and feed him until he could eat no more. Stuffy Pete happened to pass by on his way to the park. The servant had gathered him in. Tradition had been followed. Stuffy Pete sat in the park looking straight before him for 10 minutes. Then he felt a desire to look in another direction. With a very great effort, he moved his head slowly to the left. Then his eyes grew wider and his breath stopped. His feet in their torn shoes at the ends of his short legs moved about on the ground. For the old gentleman was coming across Fourth Avenue toward Stuffy's seat. Every Thanksgiving for 9 years, the old gentleman had come there to find Stuffy Pete on his seat. That was a thing that the old gentleman was trying to make into a tradition. Every Thanksgiving Day for 9 years, he had found Stuffy there. Then he had led Stuffy to a restaurant and watched him eat a big dinner. They do these things more easily in old countries like England. They do them without thinking about them. But in this young country, we must think about them. In order to build a tradition, we must do the same thing again and again for a long time. The old gentleman loved his country. He believed he was helping to build a great American tradition. And he had been doing very well. 9 years is a long time here. The old gentleman moved straight and proud toward the tradition that he was building. Truly, feeding Stuffy Pete once a year was not a very important tradition. There are greater and more important traditions in England. But it was a beginning. It proved that a tradition was at least possible in America. The old gentleman was thin and tall and 60. He was dressed all in black. He wore eyeglasses. His hair was whiter and thinner than it had been last year. His legs did not seem as strong as they had seemed the year before. As this kind old gentleman came toward him, Stuffy began to shake and his breath was shorter. He wished he could fly away. But he could not move from his seat. "Good morning," said the old gentleman. "I am glad to see that the troubles of another year have not hurt you. You continue to move in health about the beautiful world. For that blessing you and I can give thanks on this day of Thanksgiving. If you will come with me, my man, I will give you a dinner that will surely make your body feel as thankful as your mind." That is what the old gentleman said every time, every Thanksgiving Day, for 9 years. The words themselves were almost a tradition. Always before, they had been music in Stuffy's ear. But now he looked up at the old gentleman's face with tears of suffering in his eyes. The snow turned quickly to water when it fell upon his hot face, but the old gentleman was shaking with the cold, He turned away with his back to the wind, and he did not see Stuffy's eyes. Stuffy had always wondered why the old gentleman seemed sad as he spoke. He did not know that it was because the old gentleman was wishing that he had a son. A son would come there after he himself was gone. A son would stand proud and strong before Stuffy and say, "In remembrance of my father," then it would really be a tradition. But the old gentleman had no family. He lived in a room in one of the old houses near the park. In the winter, he grew a few flowers there. In the spring, he walked on Fifth Avenue. In the summer, he lived in a farmhouse in the hills outside New York. And he talked of a strange bug he hoped someday to find. In the fall season, he gave Stuffy a dinner. These were the things that filled the old gentleman's life. Stuffy Pete looked up at him for half a minute, helpless and very sorry for himself. The old gentleman's eyes were bright with the giving pleasure. His face was getting older every year, but his clothes were very clean and fresh. And then Stuffy made a strange noise. He was trying to speak, as the old gentleman had heard the noise 9 times before. He understood it. He knew that Stuffy was accepting.
"Thank you. I'm very hungry."
Stuffy was very full. But he understood that he was part of a tradition. His desire for food on Thanksgiving Day was not his own. It belonged to this kind old gentleman. True, America is free, but there are some things that must be done. The old gentleman led Stuffy to the restaurant and to the same table where they had always gone. They were known there.
"Here comes that old man," said a waiter. "It buys the old no-good fella a dinner every Thanksgiving."
The old gentleman sat at the table watching. The waiters brought food and more food, and Stuffy began to eat. No great and famous soldier ever battled more strongly against an enemy. The turkey and all the other food were gone almost as quickly as they appeared. Stuffy saw the look of happiness on the old gentleman's face. He continued to eat in order to keep it there. In an hour, the battle was finished.
"Thank you," Stuffy said. "Thank you for my Thanksgiving dinner."
Then he stood up heavily and started to go to the wrong door. A waiter turned him in the right direction. The old gentleman carefully counted out $1.30 and left 15 cents more for the waiter. They said goodbye, as they did each year, at the door. The old gentleman went south, and Stuffy went north. Stuffy went around the first corner and stood for 1 minute. Then he fell. There he was found. He was picked up and taken to a hospital. They put him on a bed and began to try to discover what strange sickness had made him fall. And an hour later, the old gentleman was brought to the same hospital. And they put him on another bed and began to try to discover what his sickness could be. After a little time, one of the doctors met another doctor, and they talked. "That nice old gentleman over there," he said, "do you know what's wrong with him? He's almost dead for the need of food. A very proud old man, I think. He told me he has had nothing to eat for 3 days."
And that's all the time we have for today's show. But join us again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Ana Mateo.